Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Tony, last hour. Let's go. Hour four of the program. We are going strong until 10 o'clock tonight. Then we will turn the microphone over to our friend Julie DeCaro. Make sure you check out Julie from 10 until midnight tonight. As a matter of fact, we'll talk around 9:45. So you'll get an early. Is this our last show before vacation? I think it's our last show before vacation. Yeah. She's like going up into like the woods of North Dakota or something. We'll ask her about it around 9:45. So this morning, so to give you an idea of what goes into putting together a show, a lot of times, like, I said this to Maggie last week, and it's so true. I am my dumbest right after a show. I'm just useless. Especially like a 3 or a 4 hour show. Just dumb. So I'll walk into the production studio. And I'll talk with Herbie. Herbie's the EP of the show. He is the person most responsible for helping me put the show together. Tony's in charge of sound for tonight. We don't get Tony as much as I'd like, but Tony's in high demand because he's good, which is what happens. You get good on this show, they put you on other shows. That's how it works, which is good. So I'll go in there and I'll talk to Herb and I'll be like, yeah, so tomorrow we should, yeah. And yeah, I don't know what I want to do. I'll text you later. And then I walk out. This happens almost every night. I am at my absolute dumbest immediately after the show. I go home. Sometimes the drive home clears my head. I'll get home and text her and be like, hey, we should talk to blah, blah, blah tomorrow. Or I want to talk about this tomorrow. That sort of thing. What usually happens, though, is I'll go for a walk, go for a run, go to the gym or whatever. And then after that, like, my brain is like good and lubricated. So I'll text Herbie with ideas that I want for the show. I listen to stuff like I'll listen to Mully and Hanley, or, you know, lately I've been catching up on Bill Burr's podcast, which is amazing. Listen to Mark Maron. Check out I love Levitard's show, like watching that when I'm in the house. Checking Twitter for different things. And I ran across this morning, and I thought that you would dig it. Here's why. The name of this piece is All 22, the RPO evolution that had Eagles opponents searching for answers. It's a piece done by Sheil Kapadia. I hope I'm saying that correctly. For Smart Football, Chris Brown, who does great work. Run it. That's a hat tip to Herb. They did a film breakdown on the Eagles RPO, run pass option. The reason that it's germane to our discussion is because the Bears are going to do some of this, and maybe they end up doing a lot of it. But I was like, okay, I'm intrigued. So I printed it out. It's like 20 pages. I printed it out because it has plays diagrammed. I'll tweet out the link to the story so you can digest at your leisure. And I said, this is something that I want to share and talk about tonight, because Bears fans are going to hear and see a lot of it. And I wanted to share a few passages. And then it sent me down a rabbit hole to finding video on this. And the video is from NFL Network, and it's video. But I think there's enough good audio that it'll translate to radio. That's the bet that I'm going to make, that after listening to it, I was like, you know what? We can play it and people will enjoy it. But first, let me share some from the piece. And they had the quarterback coach at Villanova draw up the plays. It's super, super good. It starts with this. 11 years ago, when Doug Peterson was coaching high school ball at Calvary Baptist in Shreveport, Louisiana, he had quarterback Jack Booty incorporating run-pass options, even though neither of them knew it at the time. Parenthetical stop here. Is this John David Booty that we're talking about? Remember the LSU quarterback? Jack Booty. Did he play for Doug Peterson in high school? Just a thought. Anyway, I digress. It was just, hey, on this run play, if you see this backer come up, hit this slant right here. Give a signal if you like it or if it's uncovered, said Booty, who's now the offensive coordinator at Cornerstone Christian in San Antonio. So even off of a run play, we were still throwing the ball sometimes. In a way, it was RPOs that we were doing, but we didn't call them RPOs. We didn't make it a focal point of our offense, but if it was there and we saw it, we would take it even off of the run play. Close quote. The way Peterson remembers it, his first exposure to the actual term RPO came at a later stop with the Kansas City Chiefs, who were trying to build their offense around quarterback Alex Smith. Ding, 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 ding. There's no dings in the story. I added that parenthetically. Quote, he used some of that in San Francisco when he was there. And then we started just the more you study the college film, really in the offseason, when you're looking at college players for the draft, you get ideas and things that might you could possibly implement into your offense. And that's where you can get a lot of ideas from. Close quote. The Eagles use RPOs en route to an 11-2 start with Carson Wentz last year. When Nick Foles took over, they leaned on them even more. It was a concept that Foles had become familiar with from his days playing for Chip Kelly, but the Eagles knew they had to add some bells and whistles to maximize the effectiveness of RPOs in 2017. Through studying the game at every level and coming up with new ideas on their own, Eagles coaches consistently found ways to keep defenses off balance with RPOs last season and will look to stay a step ahead once again in 2018. Quote, you're trying to find guys who are in a bind, said Jason Kelsey. The linebacker, you're being told you got to fill this gap and stop a run and create one line of defense. But at the same time, they're telling you, you've got this hook curl back here and you've got to get that man in coverage. To me, that's a conflict. That's where you're trying to rob Peter to pay Paul type of stuff. So what happens on some of these plays is the safety or the outside linebacker is looking at, well, there's a guy running a slant. There's a guy that's running a smoke route or a curl. I have to choose. And what the Eagles were doing is they were running a lot of pick play stuff to make it even more confusing. So you have a guy run a slant, but kind of doing it as a pick. He turns around and extends his arms as if he's going to get the ball. And then the linebacker's caught in between. Meanwhile, on the front side of the play, you have the quarterback reading the safety that's coming down in the box and whether or not he's going to keep it or give it to the running back. Some of the things that when you look at Mitchell Trubisky with the athleticism, the wheels that he has, you think he might be able to accomplish. And one of the things that Peterson did is he wanted to have the same look on a play. So you see a formation, and a lot of, remember last year, I forgot who we were talking to, Herbie, who was saying that the Bears kept running stuff, the same stuff out of the same formation, and that they became extremely predictable out of that. Peterson saying that you show the same look, but you run different stuff out of it. And even if it's just, you know, an RPO look, you might be able to change a route combination that's going to confuse the defense even further. A linebacker goes, oh, I know what this is. This guy's running a slant. That guy's running a curl. I know what to do. And then the guy runs a fly. And now you're screwed. Because now that gives them an opportunity to run, to get a big chunk play. But I digress. Chris Brown, run it, said this. The number one reason that RPO works is because you put a defender in a run-pass bind. And most of the time, with a run-pass bind, the defender is a zone defender. So I think the levels and the replace slant are really intended as zone-beating RPOs, and the classic example being that you ride out the mid-zone or outside zone and read the backside linebacker who is a zone defender. He doesn't have a man-to-man responsibility. He's in conflict. So that's why a pretty simple route concept, whether it's a 5 yard in or a quick slant just to the open spot, works so well. Close quote. They draw up the plays. They run a couple of quotes in here too. Brown went on to say, they do what I know as a lock call on the backside. I'm talking about the offensive line, where either the guard and the tackle or just the tackle, depending on the alignment of the defensive line, will just block out on their guy or pass set. And the advantage of that, the main one, is if you're going to run one of these, you're going to want to at least get a hat on the four defensive linemen so that you don't have a free rusher that's going to blow up your quarterback. If you're going to run one of these downfield ones, especially in the NFL, you don't want the defensive end to just put a helmet underneath your quarterback's chin. The other thing that I think people stumble into a few years ago, and the Patriots example is a great one, is that when the defense sees the backside lineman actually pass set or block out the other way, it cuts the defense in half. They're reading those linemen, and they treat it like a pass play to that side. Let me stop there. So think about it. You have five linemen. Three of them are on the left side. Let's just say that the play is set up on the left side. So you have your left tackle, your left guard, and your center. If you can visualize this. Setting up to run block. So taking their step forward. You have on the right side two guys that are lining up in pass protection. So the defense reads this, or at least part of the defense reads this, oh, pass play. My side, my quarter, my half, it's a pass play. Okay, got it. Meanwhile, the quarterback is reading on the left side what that safety who comes down in the box is going to do, and then counts the box. Is it seven? Is it six? Well, if it's six, the defense is screwed because now you have three linemen basically pulling, getting out and running, and the quarterback can keep it or he can hand it off. This is where a guy like Jordan Howard can end up with a whole bunch of yards this year. Now, it might not be Mitch, and we talked with Anthony Heron about that. That the concept doesn't necessarily mean that it's going to be the quarterback who's keeping the ball. But in most of these plays, it's a handoff, that mesh point. The mesh point is when the quarterback and the running back are at the same place, the quarterback has the ball, and then he makes the decision after reading the defense or reading a particular player. In this case, what I'm talking about, it's that guy who comes down. Counting the box, making the split decision to give, to keep, or to throw. That takes a lot of dexterity, confidence, and intelligence to make that whole thing work. Back to the piece, and then I'll explain more. They're reading those linemen, and they treat it like a pass play to that side. And then actually it creates natural running lane, especially against teams like the Patriots, where they're very well coached, so they're reading their keys. And then their keys get screwed up, so they actually fly over there, and it'll put the big natural running lane right down the middle of the defense. Ken Fajol, a linebacker's coach, said this: "The thing that makes it double tough for us is that a lot of times teams will do it with a pulling lineman. So right now, all of a sudden, if you're reading an offensive line as a linebacker, then all of a sudden it draws your attention off those things. It really puts a lot of burden on your coverage people behind you, because those are the people, even though they're reading, they seem to be attacking them in terms of coverage, of the coverage part of it. They just know that right now when they're pulling linemen, it becomes harder for us to give them body help. It's harder for the linebacker to slide into the window where they're throwing a slant off some type of read action and they're pulling the lineman in front of you. It becomes tougher that way for us. And that's the reason why they do it. You can say, you don't have to step with the down lineman. The problem is now they're handing the ball off and they've got a lead blocker and you're getting gashed in the run game. So it's a very effective tool from the offense's standpoint." Whew, that is some sexy football. It is.
So quarterback has to know all of that before the play clock runs out.
No, quarterback has to do that while the play is going on. Ball snapped. The run play is called. You walk up with the running back at the mesh point of where you're going to hand the ball off. While you're doing that, you read where the safety is coming down or the outside linebacker is. Now, maybe you saw some of it pre-snap, where you saw where a linebacker was on the backside of the play, and you go, he's going to jump the slant. I'll throw the curl, or I'll throw the deep route, or I'll throw the smoke route. That side gets vacated. You've got a pass catcher out there with a linebacker whose head is on a swivel. It's cool stuff. So check it. We're going to take a break. Then I'm going to share with you Doug Peterson actually talking about RPO. I told you we're going to have sexy football tonight. It's next here on The Score. So we were having this conversation about run pass option. I think that it's something that you're going to see the Bears try to do. We were talking during the break. I was like, Tony, ask the same question that you asked during the break about RPO.
So in the Bears' case, all of that, the success of this offense depends on if Mitchell Trubisky can more times than not accept that information accurately.
Yes. And if he doesn't get cracked up.
If he has time enough to decide.
There are going to be plays where he runs the ball, though I think that's less than you think. There's going to be plays where he hands the ball. I really do think that if things go well, that Jordan Howard could have an absolutely monster year. He can be the LeGarrette Blount, but better. Same thing for Tariq Cohen. I think on the backside, like, you can have some funny formations where Tariq Cohen ends up on the outside one-on-one or two-on-one on a linebacker that's confused on what to do if they do this well. The other part of this, that offensive line's got to be nimble and smart. It's a must. So as I was reading this story, I went searching for more data on it. And guess what? NFL Network actually got Doug Peterson in a room with a dry erase board to break this down. Him, Ron Jaworski, and Brian Baldinger. Now, look, it's meant for television, so keep that in mind when you're listening to it. So turn the radio up a little bit. But I think there's enough here that you'll get something out of it. This is courtesy of NFL Network.
This is kind of the nuts and bolts of what an RPO really is. This is like the staple way, the bubble slant, right? Okay. We run a slant here. We run a bubble slant up top. what I'm going to do, I'll just kind of diagram like the staple day one install play that we put in. The biggest thing is on this particular play, we're going to try to run an inside zone play. From a blocking standpoint, we got enough hats for hats, and we're just sort of double teaming our way up inside zone, giving the ball carrier the ball. What ends up happening, okay, is a couple things. Number one, quarterback is going to read that linebacker. He's going to see where he is. So in this particular configuration, he's kind of in this A-gap area, what we call the A-gap, ABC, D
He'd
outside.
He'd be the Mike linebacker, don't
you? Yeah, in that situation. So that's him. So we know as a quarterback, this safety is going to fill, right? Somebody has to take this spot right here. So what we know is we're going to get rotation to the front side. So the quarterbacks know that pre-snap. So now the quarterback has to read this guy and make a determination. Is it a seven-man box or is it still a six-man box? If it stays a six-man box, right, six guys, four down linemen, two linebackers, then it becomes a give. Quarterback will give
hat
it all back. Just hat for hat and let's go.
Wentz takes the snap, gives off to Matthews, and Matthews breaks a tackle and picks up 6 yards.
Nice job, nice job. Good work, good work.
The other part of this now is when it's a true seven-man configuration. Now it's a true, now let's say this safety's all the way down in the box, okay? This safety's now in the middle of the field, right? And it becomes a true, now it becomes a true seven-man box. Now we have the numbers we want to take advantage of the throw. And this is where the typical bubble slant, and now we're gonna feel that defender right there from a quarterback's perspective, okay? And maybe even, you know, if he settles and they play zone, we'll throw it, right? If he attacks right here, then we're gonna throw the slant in behind.
Well, Doug Peterson has done a phenomenal job with this football team, just preparing them each and every week. And the way he goes about his game plan and attacking teams.
Hey, we're gonna keep it going. We're gonna keep it going, right? Let's go.
If you're going to put this play in day one install, this is what you teach.
Yeah.
You know, you're just going to teach the concept. You know, we're not going to get all advanced on day one.
Yeah.
You know, you're not going to throw trigonometry when you haven't even done, you know, basic math. So this is the day one RPO install.
One thing I thought was interesting about you, Doug, when you guys did throw it off this, is you threw some out cuts. Most teams are throwing an in cut.
Correct.
Off their RPOs, but you sort of changed that up a little bit.
Correct. We changed it up a little bit, and this is one that we took advantage of. You know, again, we run this play or this formation a lot.
Yep.
So
3-by-1.
I'm a big believer, and I think you got to do this in the NFL. There's a lot of smart defensive coaches. Mm-hmm. Some of these unique formations, like this is a unique formation, especially when Zach Ertz is on the backside singled up. You better have a run. You better have a throw. You might have a screen. Something off of the same look.
Right.
So you're not always presenting
the
same play.
So you're not giving that tendency
to the defense. So in this case, this was obviously an evolution of the RPO, a little bit of a box count. So, again, you can see you got five down linemen. We're running an inside zone scheme. You know, how are you going to get to that stack backer right there?
Yeah.
Be tough.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's hard. You're going to ask a big Brandon Brooks to get through there. It's tough.
Yeah.
It's tough. So this is where now the RPO comes in, and it's the quarterback's discretion on this one. We know 59 is going to be free, right? And then it's the QB's discretion on where to go, whether it's a give to Sproles or a throw.
And he knows he's basically got a quick out down below from Ertz.
Yeah, 21 is soft and off. He knows he's just going to be it's going to be a quick out.
Yeah.
Listen, and he's got to be committed to it.
120! What's your shot?
Can't beat me. I'm going to give it. No, I'm going to throw it. No, wait, I got to give it. Yeah. You can't do it.
You
got to be
whacked.
Committed.
Yeah, you got to.
Or it's going to be a fumble.
One little thing here, Doug, just a little coaching point here is, the back, if he's not getting it, he's got to stay out of the way here. Now, this is Sproles here, so it's a little bit easier for him to get out of the way. But, like, you know, last thing you want is any indecision by the back if he's going to get it.
So one of the things that we do with our backs, and this is something that I learned being around Deuce and being around guys that were with Chip Kelly.
Yeah.
One of the things the backs always did is that they disengage.
Okay.
So they go through their footwork. Oh, I don't get the ball. Now we disengage.
Right.
And we stay out of the way.
We stay out
of the play.
Where would you rather be tonight?
No place. No place in the world. After a 13-year wait to have an NFC Championship game here, there is nothing like it.
Gives you chills.
That's why we coach and play, right?
Right.
For games like this, that's why we do it.
Bolt takes the snap. He fires out to the near side, complete for the first down as he has Ertz down at the 10-yard line. Ertz.
They scheming us, dog. They scheming at us.
Tell you what, this thing is really working well. This run-pass option where Nick has an opportunity to read what they're doing defensively, and they've got another first down.
I put this one in just because of the unique design off of this, Doug. Yeah. Because it's really clever. I mean, what you have Matt Collins doing right here. I mean, I don't know. You anticipate man coverage down here off the stacks.
Third and one.
Third and one.
Short yard situation.
They're selling the run. But what made you, for Mac to do this, to just get this clean rub here, just kind of give the impression that the ball's coming?
So, I hate to, like, toot my own horn, but this is one of the concepts I came up with.
Yeah.
And just you just watch so much tape, and you understand what teams are
doing,
especially in third and one situations.
Yeah.
Again, this is a called run. This is a route combination down here,
yeah.
right?
We put
it's a glorified pick scheme. It's what it is. We ran a ton of this formation all season long.
Okay.
So, again, we presented the defense with the same look. We wanted them to understand that we were coming back with the exact same plays that we had run earlier in the game. So now we're in a third and one situation. 22 right now has no clue really what's coming.
No.
By scheme, by design,
he's
by
seeing a, he's by seeing play Collins call. Come
he's
right
see,
at him
he's
here.
Seeing everybody coming at him. So Mac's a little flat, okay? Right? He needs to work with that near shoulder, right? But he does a great job of just turning, kind of sticking his hip out just a little bit with his hands. Again, all coaching points that Mike Rowe did a great job with our receivers last year. And again, a third and one situation. Ertz is coming off the ball like he's attacking 22, right? Oh, now 22's eyes are here. He's late to the party. And then we can throw the ball to the flat.
So this year, built-in LeGarrette Blount run with this RPO option on the outside.
On the outside.
That's phenomenal.
What's Nick reading right here then? Yeah.
He knows it's man coverage. We designed it. If it was zone,
we're
going to give it.
Okay.
Yeah. It's blitz and it's man.
Yeah.
It's the throw all day.
Make the defense wrong.
Yeah.
Pretty simple.
Pretty simple stuff. That's from NFL Network. It's great. To find that video so that you can watch some of the stuff that's being drawn up on the board and see how, you know, it works, just Google Peterson Jaworski Baldinger. And that video will pop up, like, immediately. So you could see it for yourself. When I had Anthony Heron on at 7 o'clock, one of the things I asked him was about run-pass option and how the Bears could use it. Here's what he explained to me. This is a guy who played, 5 years in the NFL as a defensive guy. Here's what he said is important for you to know about RPO.
Expectation for how they can look as an outfit. And then from there, you say, okay, they're right on the borderline. They're on the cusp of building something that could end up being good. They're just kind of, you know, they're on that razor-thin line of how do we actually execute some of these elements at a better level, not miss that pass, not blow that deflection, not trip coming out of the break in a route. Some of those things that you want to make sure they've got the mental part of it down and recognize when the strike play is there and show the willingness to actually attack as they claim they're going to do.
Anthony Heron is one of the smartest football minds that I come in contact with. I enjoy talking football with him. I'm hoping that you're getting something out of this segment. Later on in the show, I'm going to do a segment on RPO because Chris Brown at Smart Football had a piece today there that was done by Sheil Kapadia. And it was great breaking down the first year success of what the Eagles did. And then there's a video of Doug Peterson talking about it, which I think is fascinating that I'm going to go through as well. But since I have you here, since I have a defender here, for the uninitiated that is going to hear run pass option or RPO all the time coming up as we get into the Matt Nagy offense and what Mitchell Trubisky might be, can you break it down to a digestible level for the person in their car right now that's like, wait, I keep hearing that term. What does it mean and how will it affect what the Bears do?
Well, part of what I believe at this point still confuses people a bit with the term RPO is that it's still assumed a bit that RPO means that the quarterback himself is always that run pass option, that he will either be the passer on the play, or if he doesn't hand it off, then he's going to be the ball carrier on the play. That's not necessarily, especially at the NFL level, not necessarily what RPO means. Like Chris Collinsworth ended up using that term describing what the Eagles were doing in the Super Bowl a lot last year. But it didn't necessarily mean that, you know, he was looking at Nick Foles and thinking that, okay, there's an opportunity for him to throw the ball or for him individually to run the ball. That's not what he meant with the RPO. The RPO is essentially the ability to call a run play or a pass play post-snap, to make that decision for what you see pre-snap, and then as the ball gets snapped, to make the decision of if you're going to hand it off, if you're going to be a ball carrier, or if you're going to throw it to one of the safety valves that tends to be there on the outside. It could be a horizontal attack or a vertical attack. But the biggest thing I would pare down is that to recognize it's not necessarily the quarterback who is the run option on that in all scenarios. It can be that you're going to hand the football off as the run option, or you're going to throw it as the run option. So as mobile as Mitchell Trubisky is, then him being a run threat doesn't mean he's got to tuck the football and try to pick up a first down with his legs. It can just be him threatening the defense laterally. It can just be him running sideways for a few steps and then still hitting a pop pass later on. So RPO, that the run pass option of it, doesn't mean like we would see at the collegiate level where in a Marcus Mariota sort of way or in a Deshaun Watson sort of way for some of the recent college stars who've been great with the RPO. Doesn't necessarily always mean the quarterback himself becomes a runner. Especially in the National Football League, the RPO can really end up meaning that the quarterback is either going to hand it off, depending on what his eyes tell him, or he may fake the handoff using some of those mesh point ball mechanics in the backfield and then throw a pass. So the run-pass portion of it is not always just dependent on the quarterback controlling it with his legs as a ball carrier.
So that was Anthony Heron with me. Him breaking it down. I think that that's important to note. You don't want to see too much of Mitch running. It does put him in peril. And it's a great point, too, that was made at the end by Brian Baldinger on the NFL.com piece of, is your back nimble enough to get out of the way? Tariq Cohen, small guy. Jordan Howard, are you running into situations where it looks a little clunky when those guys are running plays like that? Something to keep in mind. I thought we'd have a nice, long, drawn-out conversation about football, and damn it, we had one. I loved it. Take a break. We'll talk with Julie DeCaro next here on The Score. A couple of people with senioritis going on right now on The Score airwaves. That's because I am off tomorrow, and Julie DeCaro is getting ready for a big old vacation.
I may not come back, to be honest.
No, we need you to come back. We need you to come back. I would be sad if you weren't here.
All right, well, I'll try to come back. That's
all right,
the best I can do.
So how long are you going to be gone?
I don't want to say specifically because I feel like there are burglars out there who might be listening, even though my neighborhood is extremely tight and people will be in my house. So
yeah, I mean, it could also be a staycation.
True. Yeah, no, I'm not going to be back until the Julie and Maggie show a week from Saturday.
Okay. All right.
And I'm going to go right to it from the car. Like, so it's going to be like serious vacation brain.
So hold up. You're going to come back. Like, you're not going to go home. You're going to come here.
Well, I think we're going to go home, unload, and then I'll come.
Wow.
So Maggie's going to have to carry the entire show. I mean, I have no idea what's happening.
I might have to just come in that day.
Just to watch.
Just to, like, just to hang out, you know, hold Maggie's hand a little bit through it.
Yeah, she'll be fine.
Just have a little extra voice here, just over in the corner, like.
She can do 4 hours on Very Cavallari standing on her head.
Oh, I could too. Here's the problem with Very Cavallari. Not enough Jay.
Not nearly enough Jay. And too many of those stupid girls.
They're mean.
They're terrible.
Do you really like that album?
And people were saying stuff on Twitter like, oh, see, this is what it's like when you have an office that's only girls. And I'm like, I worked at a law firm that was all women, and it was nothing like that.
Well, can I just say that I did enjoy that we saw Kristen get mad. Like, we saw Kristen be like, I am trying to run a business. As bizarre as this looks, and we all know that I'm a reality star, but y'all are messing with my money right now.
The redhead, she's got to go.
She's awful.
She's the worst.
She's getting her own show.
She's
trust.
A mean girl.
Trust she's getting her own show.
Of course she is.
She's getting the spinoff. Because of that,
Because all she does is cause drama.
And I'm sure that she knew that. I'm sure that she's like,
probably.
Watch this. Watch how I'm about to come up.
You know what I would watch?
How dare you pick on another redhead, by the way?
She's not a real redhead. How dare you? She's not a real redhead. I want to see an hour of Jay interacting with that one really young blonde who is clearly terrified of him that he made put out all the traffic cones in his driveway.
I thought that was the funniest thing.
It was amazing.
Because Jay Cutler literally had a get off my lawn moment on television, and it was excellent.
And she's so afraid of him. And I just laugh and laugh. I mean, be afraid of Jay. Come on.
With those hats, it's hard to to be afraid.
I was like, what's that hat last week when they were house hunting? It was very like Marcus Mumford.
Well, it was that other dude. That other dude had on the same hat that Jay had on.
A Nashville thing.
I don't know. And then he's like, yeah, let's buy this house that's an hour outside of the city.
I know.
And let's have goats.
I'm all on board for that house, though.
Yeah, I mean, it's a pretty dope house.
But it must be so nice to be rich and just be like, I'm tired of this house. Let's move to another one.
I thought that was very, I mean, Jay made, what, $126 million from the Bears or whatever. He's got it, and she's got money. So the fact that he's like, you know what, we're just going to move.
Like, guy's bored. Let's move.
I'm bored. I'm thinking, because wasn't the quote like, I'm thinking about buying a house, yeah, like today.
Like, and it doesn't matter what she thinks, because he's got enough money to buy a house on his own.
Right.
It doesn't matter.
Right. This is not one of those shared married moments where you have to pull the money together.
Right. No.
And he can be like, he can write a check. Think about that. That Jay could write a check for that house.
Honestly, if someone said, do you want to move to a house where you can keep little baby pygmy goats? I would be like, yes, let's go. Call the movers. So I don't know what her issue is.
See, I'm still trying to figure out your childhood. Because I feel like there's probably some sort of book in there. Because I know about Julie the athlete. You know, I know about Julie the crazy soccer player. I know about Julie the gymnast. But there's a lot of Julie the farm girl in there, well, we're starting to peel away some of those layers.
I was not a farm girl. However, we did have a horse.
What?
My mom used to have two. We had one, and I would ride my bike over to where the horse was. So, because we lived on like a block, you know, I mean, we didn't have like a subdivision. I mean, we're in a subdivision, so it's not like we have a barn. But I mean, Roscoe, where I grew up, is extremely rural. Like, there's a lot of cows and sheep and
hold
horses.
Up. What was the horse's name?
Muffy. She has a show name, but I don't know what it was. It's like Miss Moffitt's something. I don't know. My parents did dressage.
No.
Yeah. Which
so
is like
the Mitt Romney stuff.
Yes. It is so dumb. So my parents like are probably devastated listening to this right now.
So it's where you have like the horse kind of do like a march dance type deal.
Different gates and
can you do that?
No. No. I rode our horse bareback most of the time.
What?
So I don't even know how to put a bit in a horse's mouth.
So you're an excellent rider, is what you're telling me.
I'm not an excellent rider, is what I'm telling you. I'm comfortable on a horse, but I'm not a good rider.
Wow.
What?
I am blown away by this. Okay, I have so many questions. So were they doing like dressage, like competitions?
Before I was born, yeah. I don't know if my dad ever did it. I mean, my mom was like a big dressage person.
Wow. How does one get into dressage?
I have no idea. No idea.
Are there like pictures of your mom like in trophies and stuff in the house?
I mean, she used to have a trunk that had a bunch of stuff in it. I don't know what was in there, but there's like pictures of her in this like weird little tuxedo suit, like sitting really nice on a horse.
Are there any pictures of you like that?
No. I never did dressage. I just did like, hey, we have a horse. I want to ride it.
And that's it?
That was it.
Do you have any fantasies about having a horse now?
I want to have horses. I don't know if I want to ride them.
So
I just like having them around.
What would be the point of having the horses?
I mean, it's just
like
nice
animal
to have them around.
Equine therapy?
Yeah, well, they're like dogs. I mean, they're friendly and they're nice and you can train them and... What I really want, though, are pygmy goats. They're the cutest things in the world.
What, like what Jay had
going
on.
Yeah, they're like, they look like baby goats for their entire lives.
Which is what you want. Because goats, when they grow up, not great.
No, they're not cute either. You want the ones that look young forever.
I feel that way about kittens.
Yeah.
Like, kittens are cool. Cats,
well,
not
there's
great.
A kitten that looks like a kitten forever.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I saw it on Cats 101. Come up with the name of it.
All right. But I mean, because, like, puppies turn into dogs, and dogs are, you know, loyal and forever. Cats are the worst. I just found out today in hour number one that Mark Rohde's a cat guy.
I can see that. You know why? He played clarinet.
That's why he's a cat guy?
Yep.
All clarinet. Okay, so now you've just...
Benny Goodman, cat guy.
He was a cat
I'm
guy.
I'm sure.
So, okay. So what's the fantasy vacation for a Julia DeCaro? Because I feel like your upbringing plays a role in this.
Well, not really. I mean, my sister is staying on a dairy farm in Iceland right now on vacation. That seems kind of nice.
What?
But...
And then your brother's the top gun, right?
Well, he's a Navy pilot. No, he's not a pilot anymore. He commands a base now.
I want a whole hour on the DeCaro family.
You really don't. The cat that looks like a kitten forever is called the Singapura.
Okay.
So there you go.
Does it turn evil?
I don't think so.
Well, let's hope not.
They all do eventually.
Well,
they all do.
That's how I feel, Tony. We'll have to ask Grody the next time if his cat has ever turned on him. You know what bothers me about cats that you don't get with dogs? And I've never had a pet, okay? But I have dated women with pets. And with the dog might come in and jump in the bed and be with you. The cat's crawling on top of the bed.
Yeah.
Just whenever it wants.
Mm-hmm.
It's just going to jump down whenever it wants. I don't like that. I want to know where you are.
I was sitting in bed reading the other night, and a spider completely dropped down on its web from the ceiling right in my lap. That's worse than a cat.
I had a dream, and I hope that it's not. I hope that it was a dream and not for real. I had a dream the other night, and I woke up just like freaking out. And White Panther is like, what is wrong with you? I dreamt that a spider crawled into my ear and started making a web.
Oh! Do you watch a lot of those like Monsters Inside Me shows?
No, I don't. So I've been doing all the dream analysis I can on that. And I like woke up like reaching for my ear. just like swinging like wildly on my side of the bed. So we looked and see what, you know, what that meant. And apparently it means there's a lot on your mind. It also means that there's something that you're working on because spider webs are intricate. And so it takes a lot of brain matter.
The one where your teeth fall out? Do you remember that one?
Does that mean you talk too much or?
No, it's like, I can't remember what it is, but I always have this dream where my teeth crumble and fall out. It's horrible.
Really?
Yeah, Bernstein has it too.
Huh.
That's alarming enough in of itself that Dan and I are having the same dreams.
You guys are locked in?
Yeah, it's like a Jedi mind meld.
So what are you going to do on your senioritis show?
I know I'm the only person out there probably, but I'm worried about the Cubs. I'm really worried about the Cubs.
We actually talked a lot about that tonight on the show on how there's good reason. I played it. There's a breakdown that Bruce Levine did this morning that makes a good case to be worried about the Cubs.
Yeah. And then Aaron Lemming's going to be here at 11. We're going to do Terrible Takes with Tony, which is my favorite segment of all time.
Goodness gracious.
And also, we got to deal with this REO Speedwagon situation because I am embarrassed to live in Illinois.
I'm unaware of the REO Speedwagon situation. What's going on?
There was a poll taken on the best musical act to ever come out of Illinois, and REO Speedwagon won.
I
know.
That is impossible.
We're going to deal with it tonight and rectify it.
That is impossible.
That is what happened. Over Miles Davis, Sam Cooke, Cheap Trick, Chicago.
Common.
Kanye
West.
Mavis Staples.
Yeah.
Earth, Wind, and Fire.
Correct.
It's bad.
That's terrible. Isn't Billy Corgan from here?
Yes.
Yeah.
So Smashing Pumpkins, let's put them in there too.
I mean, Eddie Vedder is technically from here.
That's right. But, you know, he changes like a chameleon. Sometimes he got in a White Sox cap.
Eddie Vedder?
You've never seen the picture of Eddie Vedder with the White Sox cap on?
Are you sure not confusing him with Cusack?
No, I'm not. He's also another guy that'll change for a dollar.
Yeah, he's the worst.
Aren't you like, who's fighting with him on Twitter? Someone was fighting with John Cusack on Twitter. I was like, what is going on? Right. I thought maybe it was you. But
no,
yeah,
it was me.
Eddie Vedder. Eddie Vedder used to rock a White Sox cap all the time.
I
want to say he was friends with Jack McDowell, like, so maybe that's what it was. And then he wrote that sad ass Cubs song. The Cubs are gonna win someday. And then they won. So, like, why not write a happy one? Never mind. Gen X. So, Julie is coming up next. It's going to be fun. And then she's going to go on vacation. I'm off tomorrow, but I will be back on Friday for Cubs Cardinals. Have a great night, you knuckleheads. Oh, and if you're on Instagram, follow me at Lawrence W. Holmes. I put my Iron Man White Sox bobblehead on there. Maybe I'll tweet it out too. And you can check it out. Go out there Saturday. First 12,000 get their own. Julie's next here on The Score.
Bye-bye.
Oh, you tripping. I'm out of here anyway. Peace out.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.